Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Happy Friday, Packers fans. Welcome in to an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I am your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thank you so much for making Pack-A-Day part of your daily routine. Of course, make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews. Those are always super helpful. And make sure to check out those Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube memberships as well. You can check those out, of course, on YouTube. If you want to get that Aaron Nagler bonus video every single week, make sure to sign up. You get the members Q&A and a ton of other stuff as well. So make sure to check those out. Now, in just a moment, we are going to be talking to Carmen Vitale. Always an amazing conversation with Carmen. Before we get there, just want to remind you to check out the Autograph app. If you're not familiar, I'm doing two extra pieces of content over on Autograph every single week. This week, I did an episode breaking down the four things that need to change for the Packers. We've seen the Packers for basically a quarter of the year now, and I think there's some things that we've learned. And what I went over is the four things that I think we learned and need to change from this Packers team going into quarter two of the season. And then I also broke down on a separate episode the three key matchups for Packers-Rams. So these are more short form episodes, about usually 7 to 9 minutes. So you're going to want to make sure to download the Autograph app and check those out. And by the way, if you're listening to this on an audio, you know, Apple, Spotify, wherever you might be getting it, check it out on Autograph, because in doing so, you can listen to the podcast over there and you get to earn rewards and bonuses while doing so. So make sure to download that app. You can use code PACKADAY when you are signing up. But without any further ado, I now bring you the one and only Carmen Vitale. What is up, everybody? I am joined now by the one and only Carmen Vitale. You can find her on Twitter, of course, at Carmi V. Of course, you can find her also on Fox Sports, pretty much everywhere on Fox Sports. Of course, she is an NFL reporter and expert and podcaster and live radio show host, guest, and everything else. Carmen, great to have you back. How the heck are you doing?
Thanks. That's a lot. It is a lot. I'm really busy.
You are. That's why we appreciate you taking the time so much to come on Pack-A-Day every week and talk some NFC North football. You're the best. So a busy week in the NFC North, of course. We had a very interesting Packers-Vikings matchup, which I want to get to first. Bears get a win against the Rams. We'll get to that. Lions, a really fun matchup with the Seahawks that ended up being a pretty fun and exciting game. So we will get into all of that and, of course, preview this week's games as well. But I want to start with Packers-Vikings. Obviously, that was the big one in the NFC North and a really one of the key games in the NFL. And it was a very interesting start and end to the game. You had the Vikings, of course, just basically literally blitz the Green Bay Packers into a 28-0 deficit. And then Green Bay storms back, goes on a 29-3 run, which is too little too late. What were your key takeaways from this one? Because it's a really, it's funny, almost the Rorschach test that this is, of asking everyone is like, yeah, the Packers stuff was garbage time, or like, no, that was really good stuff in the middle. Or like, where do you come down on this?
Yeah. I mean, the fact that the Packers came back at all, there's something to be said for that. And it is, sure, it's garbage time, but at the same time, is it really, when, you know, Brian Flores' defense is just really hard to figure out and to get down? I think that just got the Packers out of the rhythm that they wanted to have for this game. You and I talked about it last week, where we thought even though Jordan Love was probably going to come back, you were still going to want to run the ball. You were still going to want to lean on Josh Jacobs as much as possible, not put as much on Jordan Love to get it done, you know, in his first game back. He's coming off injury, all that other stuff. Well, when you're down 28-0, you have to kind of deviate from the ground game a little bit more, and you have to make up some chunk plays, some chunk yards. Obviously, Jordan Love felt the pressure on that. I do think that the first two interceptions that he threw, obviously not his fault. So there's, I mean, the third one was, again, trying to come back, trying to force things. That wasn't a good one, but I'm going to forgive him for that. I'm not ultimately worried about the Packers, given the fact that I've seen this Vikings defense, and Brian Flores in particular, dismantle every team they go against and confound every quarterback that goes against them. I'm so excited. I was just talking about it on the PFF show. This week, we're going to get Aaron Rodgers versus Brian Flores. And I'm like, that's going to be the ultimate test when you talk about, is Brian Flores' defense really that unfigure outable? I'm going to make up a word here for this defense. because if anybody's been able to figure it out, it's Aaron Rodgers, who's been in the league longer than anybody. At the quarterback position, seen everything, has all the answers to the test usually. is he going to have the answers to Brian Flores' defense? And even if he does, I still think that, you know, you can take a lot away from the fact that Jordan Love was able to figure some things out as the game went along. Because I don't think that there was any indication that the Vikings defense really let up. No. I really think that, you know, trying to figure that out in real time when you're down 28-0, there's something to be said for that. So ultimately, I'm not worried about the Packers. I think we should expect a big game from Jordan Love this week, but Sam Darnold's for real. Brian Flores is for real. The Vikings are for real. What a world.
It is a very weird world. Not something I would have expected necessarily going into the year. You have the McCarthy injury, of course, in preseason. And I thought maybe that was going to be the thing that maybe held this team back, because he looked really good. It still looked like Darnold was going to be the starter, but yeah. Man, and then you have that injury, and then you've got some injuries to Jefferson and Addison going into the year. Hawkinson's not even back yet. And you're thinking, it's probably just not going to be their year. There may be this middling team, probably a pain to play. Well, they are a pain to play, but much more than I think a lot of people expected, myself included. I'm with you, though. If anything, in a weird sort of way, at 28-0, the Vikings have you, every team has you exactly where they want you at 28-0. But with that Brian Flores defense, where he can do anything at any time in any way, and I didn't think that they really let the foot off the gas in any real legitimate sort of way. Maybe that we would have seen a couple more aggressive blitzes if it was closer. I don't know, but they still lined up in some very exotic looks. They still brought all out pressure, specifically on the interception that Jordan threw to Dontavian Wicks late in the game. So it wasn't like we saw this defense just go completely vanilla in any real way. And for them to be in that situation where, again, that's exactly where Brian Flores wants to be, with the lead being able to be as aggressive as possible, and the offense and that team being able to go on a 29-3 run against it, I do think there are things to take away from it. I ultimately still believe that the story was basically written at 28-0, that the Vikings came out, won that game right then and there, and kudos to Green Bay for sticking in there and making it close with 10 minutes left, 6-point game, two-point game at the end. But I think both of these teams are going to be in it at the end. You want to hear my hot take, Carmen Vitale?
Of course I want to hear your hot take.
The Super Bowl team in the NFC is coming out of the NFC North. And I don't know if it's going to be the Lions. I don't know if it's going to be the Vikings. And I don't know if it's going to be the Packers. The Super Bowl team's coming out of the NFC North. Maybe that's not even that hot takey, but as of week three or week four going into week five, and obviously not knowing how injuries are going to play out, I would take the NFC North over the field in Super Bowl predictions in the NFC.
I talked about it this week that I think there's three playoff teams from the NFC North in the NFC playoffs. And just by law of averages, then that means, and before the season, I picked the Lions to go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And I still believe in that. But I also think that it's really close with the Packers and now the Vikings, that if they keep up this pace of play, like we keep saying that, but we're over a quarter of the way through the season now, and the Vikings still look unstoppable. I think the tandem of Kevin O'Connell and Brian Flores is the best in the league. This division is just as hard, if not harder, than we thought it was going to be this year. And I really think that, you know, with some of the struggles in the AFC North, even I would put the NFC North, just like you said, the NFC North against the field. I'm taking the North.
Even we'll get to the Bears too, but even the Chicago Bears, like regardless of where we think they are as a team and as a franchise right now, that defense is not a defense that you want to play against in any specific week. So even if the offense doesn't get there, which I think there are signs that they will get there, and I think we'll probably talk about that in just a moment, but even if they don't, that is still a probably a pretty close to championship caliber defense if it's not, you know, sans everything else. And that makes them a difficult out every single week, just because they are going to make it a pain to play against, and you're not going to be able to put up points easily. So even if you have three teams that are, you know, very competitive playoff teams, and then the fourth one, even if they're not, you still have a defense that is very much at minimum a playoff caliber defense that you're going against with that team every week. So yeah, I think this is a very difficult division. I thought we saw a pretty heavyweight matchup this past week, which obviously the Vikings got the best of. Before we get to that Chicago Bears team, any other takeaways that you had from this Packers Vikings game other than, yeah, the Vikings very much look legitimate at this point?
Yeah, it's very interesting because looking through some of the numbers and some of the advanced metrics that I was looking through to kind of prep for this week, the Packers pass rush is concerning to me. It's not, this is where you kind of see, like, I talk a lot about how fluid defensive schemes are and that the switch from a 4-3 to a 3-4 has meant less than it ever has. But where you do see kind of these issues crop up is in the personnel. And the Packers have been built to be a 3-4 team for the last 15 years. Yeah. So that's kind of ingrained in them in the personnel that they have. And then when you look at what a 4-3 defense typically is, and the 4-3 defensive ends in particular, what they typically look like. It's not Rashawn Gary and Lucas Van Ness. Those guys aren't necessarily big enough for that particular role because they're more of the outside backer spots. And that's where I think you're kind of seeing some of the ineffectiveness of what's happening. And that's kind of a little bit concerning to me. What the caveat to all of this is that the Green Bay has the most takeaways in the league at this point. Yeah. And the strength of this defense and the strength of Jeff Hafley's scheme lies in the safety. That's why they went out and got Xavier McKinney. He's been as advertised and more, you know, an interception in every single game this year so far. So you're seeing them reap the benefits from that point of view, but those takeaways are coming, you know, in clutch moments when the Green Bay Packers need them the most. But I still would be a little bit more comfortable if you figure out how to get a little bit more pressure up front and maybe force more of those errant throws that the back end can capitalize on. That's kind of why my one thing that I saw, you know, the Minnesota Vikings O-line is one of the better ones in this league. I don't think we talk about how good they are, especially on those tackle spots between Christian Darrisaw and Brian O'Neill on either side. They weren't really stressed. And so Sam Darnold wasn't really stressed.
No.
And when that happens, that's going to, you know, allow some of these better teams to get going a little bit more. So I want to that's kind of what I saw a little bit. And then the metrics kind of backed it up. And I was like, all right, well, this probably needs to, you know, get going a little bit more. But in the meantime, the backup plan of having takeaways, I believe 12 on the season, tied for the most interceptions in the league so far, 8. That makes me feel better, but I would just be a little bit more at ease defensively if you could get some push up front.
I think there's always a glass half full, glass half empty way that you can look at some of this stuff. I think the glass half full is we expected this defensive front to be better and intimidating and maybe not so much dominating, but maybe potentially even a strength of this team going into the year. And you can point to like the way that this team is forcing turnovers and doing some really good stuff on the back end without that pass rush is a potential positive where if they do get it together, again, to your point, I mean, usually you get turnovers based off of pressure. Pressure causes the chaos, causes the mistakes, and that's how you're able to get those. Green Bay's generating those turnovers without even necessarily having a bunch of high-end pressure on the front side. So if they get there, imagine what they could do. I think that's a glass half full. The glass half empty is turnovers are fickle, and you can sometimes get them in bunches, and they come, and then all of a sudden, they have a tendency to sometimes dry up, and they don't come. And my concern on that side of things, again, from a glass half empty side of it, is if this is a bottom half of the league defense right now, and all of a sudden those turnovers dry up a little bit, like where are they then? And that would be the counterpoint to it. So again, anyone that wants to be positive can easily lean into this and say, pass rush gets going and look where this is going to go. And the other side is those turnovers dry up and where does that go? So that's what I'm really intrigued by. I think it overall has to be better and they need more impact from Rashawn Gary, Kenny Clark, Preston Smith, et cetera, up front to really make it so that this defense is coming together the way that we expected it to. Let's go to Bears Rams. I think this does two things. A, it gives us a look at the Bears, but Packers have the Rams coming up this week. So first of all, what did you see from Bears Rams? What can we take away from their second win of the season? One that I thought they needed going at home against the Rams to kind of get their season a little bit back on track. What did you take away from that one?
Hey friends, I know week 4 didn't go Green Bay's way, but we are on to week 5 and that means another chance for a victory. And of course, another chance for some wins on Prize Picks. Did you know that you can win 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as few as 4 correct picks? Listen, Prize Picks is the best way to get in on the action, and what I love is that they always put their members first. That includes fast, safe, and secure withdrawals, and when my picks hit, I can get my money in as little as 15 minutes. So this week, I'm definitely going to get in on some WNBA playoff action, that goes without saying, but I also want to go with Romeo Doubs in week 5 in LA. Romeo is due for a big game and some big time red zone production. He tore it up in training camp with his red zone ability. He is due, and I think he is going to get those touchdowns this week in LA. Whoever you decide to choose, just remember you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code Packaday to get $50 instantly when you play $5. That's code Packaday on Prize Picks to get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus, it's guaranteed. Prize Picks, run your game. What's going on, everybody? I am so insanely happy that football is back. And as excited as I am right now, I can't even begin to tell you how excited I am to be back at Lambeau Field. And this year, I'm going to be taking my oldest son to his first ever regular season game. And that moment is going to mean so much to me. Thankfully, as I search for tickets to the game, Game Time has a brand new feature called Game Time Picks that makes getting tickets to see your favorite teams play live even easier. I'm actually scrolling through Game Time right now as we speak, and there are two tickets exactly in the section where I want, and it's currently listed as one of their amazing deals. Section 137, two tickets, and it's just so insanely easy to navigate and find amazing seats at the best prices, plus have the exact view of the seats you're purchasing. I can see them right now. And my absolute favorite part, Game Time has the lowest price guarantee. You'll get the lowest price to the game, or Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. So take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY, PACKADAY, for $20 off. Download Game Time today. What time is it? Game Time.
Yeah, I mean, this was reaching a fever pitch in Chicago already. Even the first two offensive drives, I believe after the second one, it was when Bears fans were booing in Soldier Field. And I'm like, guys, it's the fourth game of the season. You have an entirely new offense. You've got a rookie quarterback. I had been preaching, again, patience. I had been saying, like, hey, listen, this probably isn't going to look good in the beginning. That does not speak to the ceiling that this Bears team can have, but like, we should err on the side of caution when it comes to immediate expectations. No one wanted to hear me. No one wanted to listen. You saw some of the, I think you started to see the turn as far as the learning curve goes for this offense in general. There was a different approach by Shane Waldron than there was by Cliff Kingsbury, for instance, in Washington with Jaden Daniels. Cliff Kingsbury has been very conservative with what he's asked Jaden Daniels to do. He has not really put a lot of the pre-snap decisions and stuff on Jaden Daniels. He hasn't asked him to throw down the field. He's asked him just to, you know, get the ball out quickly, scramble around. You know, now I think this last game you saw Jaden Daniels try to put the ball down the field a little bit more, and he was successful. You also saw that on his scrambles, he's still looking for throwing lanes. That was my biggest concern out of him coming out of college, coming out of LSU. But that has not been the case for Shane Waldron and Caleb Williams. Shane Waldron has basically given Caleb Williams a baptism by fire, where he gave everything to Caleb Williams in the very beginning, put all the responsibilities on him. I talked a lot last week, I remember, here, like, talking about the pre-snap decisions and the checks and the protection calls, and that's all falling on Caleb Williams against defenses that he's never seen before. And you see what he's learning in real time, that he can get away with this, he can't get away with that. Things that happened in college, I think there was a lot of frustration from Chicago fans on, like, a lot of these third and short situations. Caleb Williams is throwing down the field. Going into last week, he had the most pass attempts of 20 yards or more down the field. He was not converting, like, any of them. So that was a frustration, but it was also because he's used to being able to do those things, because in college you can catch a defense on its heels if it's third and short and you decide to bomb the ball away. NFL defenses are ready for that, and he's seeing that in real time, and he has to basically learn that for himself. He has to make those mistakes, and I think we're seeing now. He had his most efficient game as a Bear against the Rams. The Bears in general, the offensive scheme, it looks like Shane Waldron is starting to understand his personnel a little bit more, knowing how to use them. You saw DeAndre Swift get extraordinarily involved. Well, the Bears were running more zone when it comes to their run scheme up front. They were getting DeAndre Swift out in space as a result. And then my favorite thing was on the Bears rushing, the first rushing touchdown of the day. The Bears did not get cute. Shane Waldron did not get cute. You didn't see, like, any of the stuff that you saw prior to that, especially, like, you know, in the shotgun, on the goal line, whatever.
Option.
All the Bears did was, it was 23 personnel. So you brought out two running backs, one of which was actually an offensive lineman playing a fullback in front of Roschon Johnson, who is the bowling ball changeup of your backs. And you put three tight ends, two on one side of the formation, one on the other, and you just created a blocking wall in front of Roschon Johnson, and you said, get to the end zone. He ran straight up the middle, followed his blocker. That was it. That's all he needed to do. Bears got in the end zone, and I was like, okay, we get it now. Roschon Johnson, more of the physical back. He's more of the draw guy, because the Bears were running draw at the highest clip in the league going into that game against the Rams. but they were running it with DeAndre Swift, who is not the halfback draw type of guy.
Right.
So you can see that Shane Waldron is figuring out his personnel. It's marrying up with what Caleb Williams is learning. It's going to be okay. I just need still more patience. I'm not even saying like nothing's fixed. Nothing's a finished product. And I keep pointing to what happened with the Green Bay Packers last year and Jordan Love, who had known this offense like the back of his hand for 3 years. He rode the bench behind a Hall of Fame quarterback. And yet it took Matt LaFleur half a season to open the playbook up and trust his offense. We need to give the Bears that much credit when Caleb Williams did not have the runway that Jordan Love did.
We really need to blame CJ Stroud and now Jaden Daniels for the expectations that they set for rookie quarterbacks, because it's not normal, but we will see it from time to time where you get this rookie quarterback in, it's just like it clicks. They're in the right offense, the right system, and obviously they're very talented players, and they're like, oh, yeah, just plug and play, and they can just go and take off, and it's unbelievable. That's not what happens more often than not. And I forget who said it recently that we fail more young. It was Kevin O'Connell, right? It was Kevin O'Connell who said we fail more young quarterbacks than young quarterbacks fail us, something to that extent. Yep. And he's totally right. And we've seen it this year more than ever with guys. And I know Baker's resurgence was partly last year too, but Baker Mayfield, same with Geno Smith. We've seen it now with Justin Fields to some extent. Mm-hmm. We are seeing it. There's like three other guys that I'm forgetting where it is, you know, quarterback of Sam Darnold, obviously.
Sam Darnold, Andy Dalton, although we've got a really small sample size to that.
Small sample size, but like we are seeing these quarterbacks who are drafted early that maybe didn't have success in their first stop, and then they're getting to a new place. They're actually getting time. They're actually getting a coordinator that's building maybe an offense that's set for them, and they're taking off. And I think that time, that energy is so important. You look at somebody like Baker Mayfield. He's got a coach. Was it Hugh Jackson, right, to begin with? And then it goes to completely Freddie Kitchens, like, you know, right away. And then all of a sudden it's Stefanski. Like, in his first, like, 2 years, he's got, like, three different offensive coordinators and coaches. Yeah. Like, that's a horrible way to set something up. And, of course, it's not going to work out. And you know, we'll see what happens with Bryce Young and some of these other guys ultimately. But the expectations that Stroud and Daniel sometimes set are not fair. And it does take time, effort, energy, and reps to learn and to get better. And I think we are seeing in real time Caleb Williams have to go through some of those trials and tribulations. I think he's going to come out better because of it. And I think just a little bit week by week, we're starting to see a little bit more comfortability, not only with Caleb, but with Shane Waldron calling the plays, which is exactly to your point, which you said before the season started, is what we saw with Green Bay and Matt LaFleur and just learning all those young weapons and Jordan Love and his offense last year and trying to figure out who does what best. Then it clicked midway through. We'll see if that similar sort of story happens for the Bears, even though most of us here in Packers land are maybe hoping that's not the case. All right, let's go to Lions Seahawks, an offense that is completely clicking on all cylinders. And to an extent, another quarterback that maybe didn't quite reach their ceiling in their initial place in Jared Goff, who, what an unbelievable trade really for both franchises, because the Rams get Stafford and a Super Bowl win out of it. And the Lions, Jared Goff is just playing at an unbelievable level. I even thought last year where he was starting to get his flowers, he didn't quite get the flowers that he deserved. And I hope now that he's starting to get the recognition of like, this dude is just really freaking good. He is playing at an unbelievable level, obviously perfect day this past week. And that offense, Jameson Williams being a difference maker, it's on all cylinders right now. And I think LaPorta is still going to, you know, obviously enhance that offense even more as he gets healthier and healthier. But man, what a offense, what a team in Detroit right now.
Yeah, and I mean, it all stems from the offensive line and the fact that they're keeping Jared Goff clean. He is one of the least pressured quarterbacks in the league. And that's particularly impressive because if you look at the guys that are kind of around him in that stat, it's guys that are scramblers, right? It's Jaden Daniels who's escaping the pocket and can do all that. Jared Goff is not that person. Jared Goff is a pure pocket passer. He stays in the pocket. And we know that his game drastically changes when he's under pressure. So this offensive line, you know, getting Kevin Zeitler and all that, like, it just, it keeps being a strength of this team. And this team keeps investing in that, in not only the offensive line, but the protection scheme and making sure that there are guys around that are blocking for that are outside the offensive line that are helping them block. And then you see it kind of come out, not only in the pass blocking situations with Jared Goff, but getting the run game started, getting Jahmyr Gibbs going. I mean, Jahmyr Gibbs, he has every single skill set that you would want a running back to have. And the Lions have a front, an offensive front that is equipped to help him unlock all of those skills. So he can be a pure runner. He can catch balls out of the backfield. He can be elusive between the tackles. He can do everything for you. And you also have a scheme around him that allows for him to do that. And just, you know, the play calling that Ben Johnson has and the way that he just seems to be 2 to 3 steps ahead of everybody. And then, yeah, like Jared Goff going, having a perfect 18 for 18. It's the most, you know, pass completions of, you know, perfect game that's ever been thrown. It's an incredible feat, and it's an incredible testament to just the way that this team works together and what Ben Johnson is able to do. And you now are starting to see this, you know, this defense is getting a little bit better. They've been a little banged up. They were without Brian Branch this last game against Seattle, but it still ultimately didn't matter because this offense was able to score and be productive. They're just playing complimentary football, and Dan Campbell has these guys ready to go. I mean, there's no slump after last year and being so close to the Super Bowl. Like, if I'm betting on a team to continue their belief in themselves and to have all of the tangibles on top of the intangibles to get to a Super Bowl, it has to be the Detroit Lions.
Yeah, if you know, if there's a team that I'm betting on right now too to finish first in the NFC, I would probably be betting Detroit as well. The only thing that could potentially hold them back is a very strong NFC North where they've got extra games against tough opponents. But outside of that, they're a very complete team. I will say their first round pick, Terry Arnold, he does have to stop holding because that has been a major issue for him so far.
Yeah, Carlton Davis needs to stop giving up some stuff too in the back.
Yeah, that secondary, you know, there's certain position groups that are just cursed within certain teams, I feel like. And secondary in Detroit. Yes, secondary in Detroit seems to be that way. There's certainly some positions in Green Bay that feel that way. There's one main one. We'll see if Caleb Williams can break that in Chicago. That seems that way. But yeah, there's just certain positions. You just can't seem to find people for whatever reason. But overall, that is a very stacked, very, very good Detroit team. The one interesting thing, though, and speaking of trying to get that number one seed from a Lions standpoint here, is they have a bye this week. That is a very early week for them, which is for a playoff team, a team that's obviously has those Super Bowl aspirations, probably not the ideal scenario. So if there is a team that might be, obviously every team's going to be motivated to get that number one seed, but to get that extra bye week late in the season because they've got this early one, it is a very interesting dynamic this week where they probably don't want to be having it this week, but they're getting it. They'll maybe get a little bit healthier from it and be able to self-scout, but very early bye for Detroit.
Yeah, I remember seeing that when the schedule came out and just being like, oof, that's not going to set them up very well. But I'd be remiss, though, not to talk about a little bit just about the fact that they're able to hide a lot of their secondary woes with their defensive front. And by defensive front, I mean Aiden Hutchinson, who's leading the league in pressures, leading the league in most major pass rushing stats. And you also have, I think a lot of that has to do with the interior of the line, though, really doing their job, making sure that the protection is being slid away from Aiden Hutchinson, giving him those one-on-one matchups, which that's a testament to DJ Reader and Lee McNeil, especially on the interior of that line. And if those guys stay healthy, that's going to be the biggest difference for this defense and therefore kind of just the balance of this team and how well they all work together and play complementary football. So if you can keep those guys healthy, DJ Reader didn't start playing until, you know, he was out the first couple games. So he makes his Lions debut, is a little bit more fresher, hopefully, and can stay healthy. But Lee McNeil, Aiden Hutchinson, those are the guys that you just need to preserve. And somehow Aiden Hutchinson is still on a tear, you know, defensive player of the month, all that jazz.
He's unbelievable. He has 153 snaps on the left side, 95 on the right side. So they split him up pretty good.
And split him up.
I'm assuming he's going to see a lot of Rashid Walker when the Packers play him down the line. But if we get some Zach Tom versus Aiden Hutchinson matchups in that game, especially in pass rush scenarios, I will be very excited because Zach Tom has a clean sheet in protection so far, and Aiden Hutchinson is basically just annihilating everybody. So if we do get some Zach Tom versus Aiden Hutchinson one-on-one battles in pass pro, that could be a must-watch matchup. Obviously down the line a little bit more, but still salivating over that matchup if and when we get it. So Lions have a bye this week. Panthers, Bears. What more could you possibly want in a matchup than Panthers, Bears? We get Andy Dalton versus Caleb Williams this week. This is just got to be a scenario where the Bears continue and actually stack success and get a win after a win, go to 3-2, get a winning record. And it's in Chicago too. So this is a huge opportunity for Chicago. On the flip side, if they let this one slip, then it, you know, kind of all those negative thoughts that Bears fans were feeling probably come back a little bit.
Bears have the longest active home win streak in the league right now, which was a stat that I had to double check, double and triple check. Cause I was like, well, really? It's true. And that's an opportunity. This is an opportunity for them in so many ways. It's, you know, they can continue that streak. But at the same time, you look at, you know, on offense, especially, you need a little bit more of a get right game for the offensive line. You need to make sure that, you know, this isn't going to be an issue for the rest of the season. You have some, at least know what you should know what to expect. I expect Tevin Jenkins to still end up playing. He left the game with a bruised ribs. But I can't think that that's enough to keep an offensive lineman out in a game that they really need to get right against. And they're going to have the opportunity to do so against a Carolina defensive front that is without Derrick Brown. In the second level, you don't have Shaq Thompson anymore. You just don't have the stars on this Carolina defense, and you don't have your best players on the Carolina defense. So you have to think that this Bears offensive line, if they can't do well against Carolina, that's going to be extraordinarily concerning. And this is really an opportunity to, again, stack wins, stack the good vibes. I've talked about the kind of the sweet spot of the Bears schedule. They're in it now, and they have the opportunity to kind of, again, gel as a team, figure out what everybody's good at, and really start to see some success that's going to build on Caleb Williams' confidence. So I'm really looking towards the trenches here for the offensive line to hold up for Chicago. And again, to get the ground game going, to protect Caleb Williams, to let him kind of figure out this offense, but then be able to still be himself within it. That's the biggest thing that you're going to start looking for now that you feel like he's starting to get a handle on what Shane Waldron wants to do. And Shane Waldron is getting a handle on what he wants to do. So we saw some more typical stuff as far as, you know, the personnel usage, like I talked about on the rushing touchdown, but you saw more two tight end usage, which is what Shane Waldron's offense is kind of known for. Really interestingly enough, though, they run out of 11 personnel quite a bit. Okay. And it's just meant to kind of, you know, keep a defense on their heels, give them some more light boxes and stuff to run into. And when they do that, actually, the Bears are either eighth or ninth in EPA per play when running out of 11 personnel. And so it's something that actually works. It's kind of bad news for DJ Moore and Keenan Allen and Roma Dunze, because in those situations, they're in there to block and not actually right. go out there to catch passes. But, you know, if it works, it works. And you can't play selfish football here. You got to figure out what works and how you can kind of manipulate your personnel groupings to keep defenses guessing. And I think that's what you're going to start to see more and more. And they have just, again, such a huge opportunity against this Carolina team to do that.
It does feel like they're getting into a little bit more of a rhythm. I do like Chicago in this one to go to 3-2, which is crazy that they, you know, Green Bay and them could be at the bottom of the division at 3-2, assuming they would both win this week, which is still kind of crazy. And again, goes to show just how talented this division is. You talked a little bit about Jets Vikings already in the unbelievable matchup between Aaron Rodgers and his encyclopedic knowledge of how to beat defenses. And of course, this crazy defense that Brian Flores employs. What are you looking for here in this matchup?
Yeah, I mean, I think that if there's a way for the Jets to exploit the Vikings defensively, it's, you know, they have not been able to really get anything going on the ground. And that's Breece Hall has the most yards from scrimmage, but it's not on the, it hasn't come on the ground. It's been via these short passes to the flat, Aaron Rodgers kind of being patient with this offense. I think Breece Hall has allowed him to be a little bit more patient. If you look at who has the second most scrimmage yards for the Jets, it's still Alan Lazard. Which is kind of a crazy thing to think about when you realize that Alan Lazard probably isn't on an NFL roster if it's not for Aaron Rodgers and the Jets. So the fact that he has more scrimmage yards than Garrett Wilson, who is one of the best young receivers in this league, I just think speaks to the fact that Rodgers and Garrett Wilson are just not on the same page necessarily quite yet. We know how much it takes to be one of Rodgers' trusted receivers and how much he likes to do as far as the options that he calls out is between his cadence, and you heard all of that with Robert Sala and all that other stuff. Yeah. I actually tend to side with Aaron Rodgers on this. Like if you, he's one of the best at those hard counts. He's one of the best at manipulating his cadence in order to force mistakes from a defense. Why you wouldn't weaponize that as a team, right. I don't know. Yep. That's something that comes along with Aaron Rodgers. It's what makes him so great as a football player. Those are the opportunities that the Jets have, but on top of, but you know, after that, like this Jets defense is good, but it's nothing that Sam Darnold hasn't beaten already.
Yeah.
And this Vikings offense, it's going to be a little weird given that it's, you know, an overseas game, but the Vikings have actually never lost in the international series. They always win. So when they go overseas, which is wild because these games are so unpredictable. Yep. Guys are all jet lagged. It's just, it's an absolute mess. As someone who's been a part of them, it's just, it's your head is spinning. I don't know how these guys go out and play when your body is just fighting you every step of the way. So it's going to be a messy game, but I do still think that the Vikings kind of come out on top with the Jets. And that's crazy to say, but like we have seen them go against some really great teams and come out the other side and look even better. And now they're, you know, they opened the practice window on TJ Hockenson. I don't expect him to be out there in London. But he is going to go through practices with the team in London. Yeah. So they're like that, adding that dimension then to this offense that's already been so effective. It doesn't even feel like the Vikings have reached their ceiling yet, which is so wild.
Yeah, I like the Vikings in this one too. I don't think the Jets, speaking of reaching ceilings, have come close to their offensive ceiling yet. And it feels like they're still gaining a rhythm and learning how to play with Aaron and Aaron with some of these wide receivers and tight ends, etc. And of course, they don't have Devontae Adams yet. So that helps the Vikings as well in this one. Exactly. Yeah. Talking about that just a moment. Really quick, Packers, Rams, what are you watching for in this one?
Yeah, it was really interesting to see, you know, I don't think we've been giving enough credence to how the Rams have dealt with losing Aaron Donald on defense, and especially on that interior of the defensive line. In general, the Rams aren't, I thought I had it in front of me, but anyway, Kobe Turner, Braden Fisk, these guys among the interior defensive linemen have been creating a lot of pressure. They're the Rams leaders in pressure. Kobe Turner has 18, which is tied for third among interior defensive linemen. They are something to have to contend with. And I think that this is going to be a really good test for the Packers offensive line, who seems to be getting into a groove. I've mentioned it before. I really do think that this is a bounce back game for Jordan Love. And I think that they're going to open this all the way up for him. I don't think that there's going to be kind of this trepidation over, all right, he's coming off of injury, we should still be careful with him, yada, yada, yada. I don't see that happening in this game now. I really think that they're going to open it up for Jordan Love, but that's going to require some cooperation from the offensive line against what I think is a better defensive front than most people are giving it credit for, especially with the way that the Rams like to run different stunts and get really creative with the, you know, kind of their defensive front alignments. That's something that is really going to be a test. And I'm looking forward to seeing that, because I think that that kind of speaks then to how effectively the Packers, not only is Jordan Love going to be, but how effective they can be on the ground, getting Josh Jacobs going. And I mean, going against Matthew Stafford, I can't say enough about Matthew Stafford and just the quarterback that he is. Yep. And it's just another example why, to me, wins are not a quarterback stat, because Matthew Stafford is playing out of his mind with nothing. He has nothing, and he is still getting things done. I mean, this Rams offense is still extraordinarily efficient. You have a really good play caller in Sean McVay that is trying to make things easier on Matthew Stafford and hide all of their deficiencies on offense. So I'm really focused on, you know, can you get to Matthew Stafford? Can you get pressure on him? Can you take the ball away from Matthew Stafford, who gets the ball? He gets the ball really quickly. He doesn't really force things down the field very often. If he does, if you have him on his heels, if you have the Rams down, can you capitalize on that in the way that the Bears did at the end of that game when Jaquan Brisker ended up picking Matthew Stafford off? He actually picked him off earlier in the game, but he had stepped out of bounds prior to it. So it was an incomplete pass and got him back and all that other stuff. So the Bears were able to kind of create some pressure up front that led to some errant throws, that led to some opportunities. Can the Packers capitalize on that, especially when we were just talking about how this defensive front is not really generating a lot of pressure, but can the secondary pick Matthew Stafford off anyway? And are they going to have the opportunity to do so? How much is he going to throw the ball down the field? It's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, they hit on both of their first two draft picks in Fisk and then Jared Verse in the first round. Those two guys are fantastic. Jared Verse just got awarded NFC Rookie of the Month, deservedly so, Defensive Rookie of the Month. He's been fantastic. That matchup with Rashid Walker is going to be super important. And then, again, Fisk on the inside has the ability to wreak havoc as well. So that's definitely one I'm looking at. I like Green Bay in this one as well. Last two quick ones before you get out of here. One, where does Devontae Adams end up? And two, can the Packers still win the NFC North? I'll give you those two before we get out of here.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the most realistic place that Devontae Adams ends up is New York. And I do think that it's, you know, I people are saying, you know, oh, well, because of their situation with Haason Reddick, they have the money to do that. I'm like, well, if you think you're actually going to get something done with Haason Reddick, or you think this situation is going to end up resolving itself, that's not true. Like, you can't right. take away that money if you really want this situation to work, which I think you have to.
Yep.
Then the question then becomes, is Aaron Rodgers going to do something about it to bring his guy to New York? Is he going to restructure his contract a little bit in the way that we've seen guys like Tom Brady do, where they lessen their own cap hits? And usually it doesn't mean that they forfeit any money. It just usually means that a lot of that is converted into a signing bonus. And do you take that more of that money up front, which I don't know why you wouldn't, in order to lessen your own cap hit and give these guys room to take on the contract of Davante Adams? Because I do believe that that's the main, you know, factor in all of this for the Raiders, is not only can you get draft compensation for Davante Adams, but can you offload that contract? The Raiders are not a very well-run organization. They're not a very rich organization. They cannot afford a lot of things. I know that they are trying to offload Devontae's contract. So who's going to be the one to do that? Will the Jets do that? There's going to have to be some cooperation there from ownership, from some of the players on the roster. I do think, though, that that's probably pretty realistic. I mean, the team that needs them the most is the Kansas City Chiefs. Again, that's an interdivision trade, which teams do all the time now. It almost seems like at a rate that it almost doesn't matter anymore. And I think that if you are running a team like a business, you can't afford to think like, oh, well, they're our division rivals. No, I'm not doing that trade. Does that factor into it? Of course it does. And do I think it's unlikely that they do anything with the Kansas City Chiefs? Sure. But if you are desperate enough to offload that contract and Kansas City is giving you what you're asking for, I don't know that you can afford to not take it. I think also he should be a Dallas Cowboy, but Jerry Jones, he lands helicopters on practice fields. He does not spend money on the roster. There's so many different places that I think obviously would want Davante Adams, could use Davante Adams, but I just think at this point the most realistic is the Jets. Can the Packers still make the Super Bowl? Absolutely. We talked about it. If this division doesn't cannibalize itself, which is a very big, possibility, I think because of the fact that it could cannibalize itself, it really just makes this whole picture a toss-up. But all you have to do is get into the dance. And if my prediction of three teams from the NFC North going into the playoffs comes true, okay, even if you get in as a wild card, who cares? That we've seen stranger things. I was on a Bucks team that started as a wild card. The first time Tom Brady was ever a wild card team going into the playoffs, and we won the Super Bowl. So it just, you have to get to the dance. I have to imagine that the Packers can. And with all of the, with the depth on their roster and just kind of the creativity that we're seeing and Jordan Love's confidence and all that other stuff, I don't see why the Green Bay Packers couldn't end up in the Super Bowl.
I'm right there with you. I think it's going to be a really fun remainder of the season. We are one quarter in. We've got three quarters plus to go. And Carmen, I'm excited to be able to talk to you about it every single week. Tell all of our listeners where we can find all of your incredible work.
Yeah, just follow me on Instagram and Twitter or X, whatever it is. CarmiB, CarmiEB. That's where I pretty much post everything I'm doing.
Yeah, make sure to follow her there at CarmiB. Of course, you can follow the podcast here at Packaday Podcast, and you can follow me at Andy Herman NFL. That's going to do it for Carmen and I today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.